Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. You can download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. We will have the Predators introduction of Andrew Brunette in 1 hour. We will carry that press conference live and in its entirety on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. But the Titans are out in the field for OTAs today as well. So to help us break it down is Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, always appreciate our weekly visits with you. D-Hop is on the market. Do the Titans pursue D-Hop?
I would love to see them do that. According to reports, you know, that the one rumor right before the draft started was the Titans were trading up to the Cardinals pick at 3, and Hopkins was a part of that rumored deal. And then, you know, this past weekend, reports are out that only the Bills and the Chiefs actively called on behalf of DeAndre Hopkins with the Cardinals. And I think it's the overall sentiment that they knew that Arizona was going to do something, and ultimately they had to cut him because they didn't get the offers that they wanted during the draft. I'd love to see the Titans do it. It makes a lot of sense from Tennessee's perspective. I don't think it matches what Hopkins has specifically said he's looking for. He's looking for a structure that has, not just from ownership and general manager and head coach, because I think the Titans can meet some of the qualifications that he's mentioned there, but also a window of a Super Bowl run. And if you're comparing other teams that have been mentioned to where Tennessee is right now, where they're straddling the state line between rebuild or retool, at least publicly, I think that's the sentiment. Privately, it's probably something else. I don't think that's necessarily speaking DeAndre Hopkins' language, considering he's played for Houston and Arizona, and now at this point in his career, he wants to win. And This Titans team is just trying to win the division. Other teams that he's going to be talking to can win the Super Bowl.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, and that was very clear from DeAndre Hopkins' list of quarterbacks that he wanted to catch passes from. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Justin Herbert. I mean, it's the quarterbacks that are likely going to be the competitive teams in the AFC. But, hey, sure. Money talks.
And well, but money talks, but also, like, he was very specific about structure, organizational structure. And I don't, to me, like, if you think about from the leadership aspects of Houston and what they've been through, and then the leadership aspects of what it was like in Arizona, he's looking for a complete 180 on that. It's more than quarterback, but it is about the quarterback. Money does talk. But he had a boatload of money. If he stayed, he could have stayed in Arizona and you know, been happy with the paycheck. I think at this point he wants to play for more than the paycheck. He's going to get plenty of money, and he's been paid handsomely. He had a couple years left where he was going to continue to get that. And if he just played ball with Arizona and Monty Austin for it, who knows? He's probably still there, and they let him go because they knew he wasn't a part of their future. And look, I think you bring him in to any of these teams he's mentioned, and it's an instant upgrade. For the Titans, it would mean so much more. But I don't know if the attractive qualities are here in Nashville compared to the other places. And I'll mention, too, that we're not initially out there. Number one, Deshaun Watson initially said he wanted out of Houston right after the 2020-2021 season, months after he signed an extension, because Bill O'Brien traded away DeAndre Hopkins for pennies on the dollar. And they had a great rapport, put up a ton of numbers. I think Cleveland should absolutely be in the mix there because of their relationship. And number two, I haven't heard about the Detroit Lions, but Jameson Williams is missing the first 6 games of the season. Mm-hmm. Detroit is the talk of the offseason. They are a contender for their division, and they are poised to make a big leap forward. Adding Hopkins, knowing that the first month and a half you don't have your top receiver due to the gambling issues, to me also makes sense. And, you know, he's a quiet guy that leads by example. And when he's throwing the football, he catches it one-handed, tough catches, doesn't matter. He's a big play guy. And look, I know the Titans were burned on Julio Jones. Hopkins isn't on Julio Jones's level of on the truly back end of a career. I think he has a lot left. And when he's been on the field, he's produced. And Arizona won games even with Kyler Murray and Kingsbury when Hopkins was on the field. But I think we all agree that the Titans are further down the list if we start ranking good spots to actually buy in and check off the boxes that Hopkins has specifically mentioned publicly.
Well, I think the Titans have been burned way before Julio. They were burned by Decker. They were burned by Woods. They were burned by
Andre Johnson.
Humphreys. I mean, guys in there.
I agree.
That they thought.
I agree. But the Julio trade was a all-in move.
Yeah.
A go-for-it move.
Exactly.
In the middle of the window where they felt like they were a Super Bowl contender.
No, and you're right about that.
The about face. Like, it was a move that to pair with A.J. Brown that made sense. A.J. was recruiting him. Yes, yes. And, you know, they had just lost Corey Davis. They're replacing with Julio Jones. Now they don't have a wide receiving core except for Treylon Burks and possession guys. So it would be a similar type feel, but I don't think it's a similar player comparison personally. And Hopkins is going to get paid. Maybe not what he wants, but he'll get paid a lot more than what people think.
Yeah, well, the only thing I believe the Titans can hope for is that, as we've seen with OBJ, once you hit the market, what you think you deserve and what you want is a little bit different from what teams are willing to pay. So if he gets once you know, he's on the market now and he starts to look around, if teams are not willing to pay what he wants, then maybe the Titans become a bigger player in trying to get Hopkins. Now, Hutt, camp has started, mini camp, OTAs. When should fans be worried in regards to Byard if he doesn't show up?
Training camp.
Okay.
Training camp. Ultimately, I mean, based on what he's getting paid, he didn't want to take a pay cut. That tells you the Titans don't want to pay him that number, but if he shows up in camp, he's going to get paid. You know, they don't gain all that much by cutting him. It's tough to trade the contract at this point in the offseason, too, because the rosters are set for the 91 players on the cap, and then you've got your top 53 that count, and all the cuts come at the same time. That's when I would get worried. But look, I mean, this is, to me, it's a similar deal as Jeffrey Simmons a year ago, except Jeffrey Simmons knew that he was going to get the extension. Byard is going to show up, and I think he's a team guy. You know, he's working out locally. Logan Ryan was in town last week and went and worked out with him. And, you know, by all accounts, he's getting ready for the season. He's just not doing it in person right now. And that's big for Byard because he's always been the team guy. He's done everything the right way, and it's voluntary right now. And also, the mini camp was mandatory, and Simmons set out those practices. And that meant nothing for the season. Training camp is when I actually buy into the storylines of a holdout or a sit-in or whatever you want to call it. There is absolutely friction there in how they approached the pay cut with Byard and how that went public. And the fact that Carthon admitted he didn't ask to be released or traded, but they didn't deny that they asked him to take a pay cut. Not an extension where you get money up front to extend your contract. They don't kick the can down the road. They want the cut now, and the contract stays the same. And, you know, I would take it personal, too, based on what Byard has done. And if you're making a list of players that have lived up to expectation, then some and earned it, he's near the top of the list on this current roster. So that's when it's a story. Right now, I mean, at no point will we reference OTAs or minicamp unless there's a serious injury that takes place on a non-contact drill. Other than that, it's a lot of attendance taking, and it's a lot of preparation for new guys learning a new system.
Now, Hutt, how should they approach this Harold Landry situation coming off an ACL? Because obviously we saw, you know, Bud Dupree and Bud Dupree admitted, listen, I came back a little bit too fast. I was eager to get back.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have pulled back some, and I wouldn't have had to deal with some of the, you know, things that I had to deal with concerning my knee and then compensating or whatnot. He just was never the same player. You can look at Taylor Lewan, sort of the same thing, came back too fast. So should the Titans approach it from the standpoint of, listen, we understand where you want to be and where you are. But as an organization, we're going to hold you back until, you know, basically until the season starts. We're going to let you practice, but it's not going to be this, okay, everything's out the window, you go full go.
They definitely hold him back, right? They will pace him. But I think that the silver lining in land and all ACL recoveries are different. So it's very difficult to compare any certain one. But just let's compare it to Dupree. Dupree was coming off of an ACL tear that happened during the season. Landry's happened in the preseason, like early in the offseason. So he's going to have much more of the calendar to his benefit whenever September rolls around. That doesn't necessarily mean everything's perfect because, again, guys respond differently. We haven't heard all that much in regards to how he feels. Lawan didn't feel right. He never trusted that knee for the first year after. You know, you could just tell that was a lingering mental hurdle as well as the physical hurdle. Bud Dupree felt fine, but then realized he rushed back. And he never used the knee as an excuse coming back, saying he didn't feel great and it affected how many snaps he could play or if he was missing practices. Different recovery processes there. But with Landry, they have to slow play this, even if he feels great. And I think out of the gates, you need more of an emphasis on rotation with Weaver and others with him. Because I don't come out like he's a guy that's playing 80-90% of the snaps per game. Landry, I'm talking
about. That's a lot.
When the season starts, I mean, he's known for volume snaps, and he's known for being available. I would slow play. I'm not saying, you know, go minimum speed with his reps because if he feels great, let him off the leash, right? Mm-hmm. But I am going to keep an eye on the number of snaps compared to where he was 2 years ago on the snap count because he plays a high number of them. And I think they need more of a rotation, at least for the first half of the season, to make sure there are no lingering effects of that and just to get past the true hurdle of knowing where he is and how he's feeling with the recovery process. Only he's going to know that. And I think because of the preseason, the way it's set up, and I doubt we see very much from Landry when it comes to preseason snaps for sure. And I think they really monitor what he does practice-wise too.
More with Hutton coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow joins us now. Hutton, last week, callers, texters, listeners, we're all chomping at the bit. What did Will Levis look like? And what were the throws that he made? Is he competing with Tannehill? And I said, look, it is day one of OTAs. You're not going to be a Pro Bowler, and you're not going to become QB1 after one day of OTAs. But what do you want to see from Will Levis to at least show progress, to say, okay, you know, this guy was worthy of moving up in the second round?
Look, I think he needs to come out and be the quarterback that we saw in the SEC, right? Malik Willis was not the quarterback that we saw in college whenever we saw him for the first time. It just looked like a fish out of water based on the system that they were asking him to learn and process and play from the pocket. You know, with Levis, I think he will adapt better to what they're going to ask him to do because he's coming from an offensive system in Kentucky. It was built around the offensive line in the run game, and the pass game was set up to complement Chris Rodriguez and what was a stout offensive line 2 years ago. So that's number one. Number two, leadership when he's on the field. He's going to get a ton of snaps on the three preseason games. He'll get a ton of snaps when it comes to the joint practice work with the Vikings. And I think number three is just be about ball. You know, the mayonnaise and the coffee and the bananas and all. Like, I don't want to see any gimmicks. Like, just be about ball. And to me, that will quiet the critics some on, you know, why he was a bit unlikable throughout the draft process. And look, hey, take risks. I don't care if he comes out and throws a couple of picks in practice. I want to see just let it rip. I mean, last year, just comparing the two rookies, day two quarterbacks that they drafted, Malik Willis wouldn't throw the football in practice. It's okay if you screw up at this point. because the expectations are he's going to learn behind Tannehill at this point. I want to see him take, you know, the top off a bit and see what he's capable of based on the pre-draft and draft hype and the fact that there's no pressure on him right now. He should come out and honestly have a ton of confidence based on that. And the Titans offensive system will cater to his style greatly. The wide receiving core doesn't necessarily complement that, but Tannehill's going to feel that first. And if something were to crazy happen across the league where there's an injury in the preseason, if there is a Garoppolo issue that's legit with the Raiders, maybe someone picks up the phone and calls Rand Carthon about what Ryan Tannehill is worth in a trade value. But they only make that deal if Levis is ready to go and they're ready to start the clock.
Well, that's what I was that's what my next question was going to be to you, Hutt. One, first, Will Levis need to wear long-sleeve shirts and no more mayonnaise in a coffee because he can't show his guns. So. But no, I'm just
messing. No more mirror picks.
No more mirror picks. No more personality. No. But I understand what you're saying in regards to, hey, just be the quarterback now. That other stuff will come.
Yep.
Show that you're the quarterback now. Show the leadership. So I understand now. I was just kidding with you. But you did bring up something that I was going to ask. If this Jimmy G thing ends up going left for the Raiders, which more than likely it will, because it seems like everything goes left for the Raiders.
That's right.
I'm not saying the Raiders pick up the phone, but should the Titans, say if they pick up the phone mid-June, somewhere around there, early July, even before camp starts, or right when camp starts in July, and they say, hey, listen, it's not working out with Jimmy G. This is what we have. This is what we want. Here's a second round pick. Because I think no matter what, you're not getting a first round pick from Tannehill. No matter who, they can be in dire need. They're not giving you a first round pick. If they say, hey, listen, we give you a second and possibly a fourth or a fifth conditional pick and maybe something else in there, but we pick up his salary, do you then take a serious look at that? Really not knowing, you know, Levis is your quarterback moving forward, but maybe you didn't want to do it at this point in time.
Man, I was hoping you would say throw in Hunter Renfrow.
well, you can throw in Hunter Renfrow.
Throw in Devontae Adams, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Look, I'm open to any and all theories and options. Like, I'll talk trades all day. Financially, though, like the finances of the Garoppolo contract are fascinating because not only does he have to pass a physical, he has to get through one game without re-injuring the foot that he surgically repaired in March for him to get a dime from the signing bonus. Hmm. So if you pick up the phone in June, I don't think the Raiders are panicking all that much in June. I think it's more like end of August type situation because by then he should be on pace to pass a physical and then they want him to play. McDaniels has gone out and brought in Brian Hoyer to back him up because of the Patriots ties. And that's clearly the direction he's going. He just went with quarterbacks that he knew. So I think it's going to take a lot to break away from what McDaniels wants in the quarterback room, which is Garoppolo, because he knows the system and he knows the quarterback compared to Carr. It's crazy, though, that they let a healthy Derek Carr walk and then gave a health waiver to Garoppolo, signed him under the condition that he gets through a game and doesn't re-injure the same foot. It's a bizarre contract that's worth, what, $70 million or something.
Well, that's why the
total.
Raiders are who they are, you know?
Yeah.
Raiders
yeah.
and a Raider. And,
but this is a – like, I don't know where – McDaniels is strange. Like, I don't know where he comes down on the Tannehill option versus what else would be there. Because there potentially are other quarterbacks that are either competing for a starting job or are backups to a young quarterback right now that I think teams would also be willing to move. But to me, Mace, it's if you feel like you can get a certain round pick right now for Tannehill, I just hold on to him and I make the move later because at this point, now's the time to make a move if you're doing it for cap space because you can make a play for Hopkins. In August, you're making a play for another type player at the right at the start of the season. And to me, the price tag goes up because of that. It only goes up based on the value you have for a healthy quarterback situation compared to other teams that may be in dire straits.
Talking to Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike. And Jonathan, real quick, sort of a curveball for you as we talk a little SEC with the meetings going on. Do you think that we will have any just beginning? I know we're not going to have it solved, but do you think we'll start to get some meaningful dialogue on how to rein in the NIL stuff? It's just becoming madness. Caroline sent me an article the other day on SI about some of the state laws that are being changed so the football teams can win. It's just, it's insanity right now. It always has been, but this is, you know, this is where we are right now. But it seems like it's just getting more out of control.
Well, the state laws, that's why we need federal legislation on this, because state by state, like, so Eli Drinkwitz is yesterday at the spring meetings, Willie, talking about how there are players on his team that make more than his brother or brother-in-law, I can't remember which, who's a pediatrician. And the quote was, he saved lives.
Oh,
and I laugh at that because Eli Drinkwitz makes $6 million per season to go 500 at Missouri. Like, look in the mirror, man.
Exactly.
So, like,
wow.
I mean, he got a $2 million raise. He got a bump. And overall point being, like, I don't think we get it reined in until there is a legitimate split with the haves and the have-nots. And I think that, unfortunately, that's where we're headed in college football specifically. I'm not saying I'm for it, but the only way it's policed or regulated or capped is if you have an SEC Big Ten merge. Not necessarily they're in cahoots, like, commissioner-wise. They've always been oil and water. But as far as, like, breakaway, and then you have your set a certain standard or a cap for that group of teams, however many there are at that point. That's the only way for me, Willie, that it makes sense to actually put something in place that Saban was hinting at yesterday, which was, hey, you want to have a union? Fine. You want to be treat players like employees? Fine. But if you want to be like the NFL, there's a salary cap that allows for more continuity and consistency from top to bottom. But here's the thing. Bama and Georgia will always be Bama and Georgia with Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. And that's with or without name, image, likeness playing a factor or pay for play or rules and state laws. But I'll finish with the state law. The state of Missouri is proposing and about to pass a state law that would allow high school athletes in the state of Missouri to receive money for name, image, likeness in high school as long as they are committed to an in-state program. If they go out of state, they cannot profit off of NIL in high school. But if they're committed to in-state and they attend a state school of Missouri, they can profit from the high school level. And the it's also a bullet point in there, a provision, as it's written, that the NCAA cannot punish any state school for Missouri, any school inside the state of Missouri, if there is a representative from the university that facilitates payment for a player on behalf of a booster or a potential sponsor of that player off the field. They can be present for that negotiation, is the way it's written into this state law.
I mean, it's crazy.
And it benefits Drinkwitz. When does it start then, Hutt? It's like these kids, it's not like these kids are getting NIL deals their senior year. These kids are getting NIL deals their junior or sophomore year if they're that good. So how do you then regulate?
It's how Missouri could beat Alabama or a Georgia.
But I'm saying,
for
how
a
do you regulate a kid? Do you does he have to pay all that money back?
The kid doesn't have his driver's license. He could be getting paid. State. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah,
you know.
And they could get paid. That's right. But right now in the state of Tennessee, the local barbecue joint in my hometown can have something going with the quarterback for my hometown. Like it that's okay. But Missouri is saying, like, you can profit as long as you are committed to – it doesn't have to be Missouri, but the 4 and 5 stars, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it actually benefits Eli Drinkwitz, but he was complaining about, you know, players on his roster making a certain amount of money. It was peculiar because he's going to benefit from this. But Missouri's not the only one. I'm using them as the most recent example. Texas A&M is funneling money through their collective, through the university's Aggie fan club. There's two separate accounts. There's if you do certain things for the collective there, you're automatically, you get a boost in season ticket options. but you have two separate payments. So it's not guaranteed. It's set up so there's a loophole where you get certain season ticket perks, but you're going to write two separate checks, but the first one's to the collective. And that's based on the Texas state law. And they're following. And by the way, the NCAA allowed this to happen. They took a step back on July 1st, 2021. And they took a step back and said, you're on your own. Regulate this as a conference and follow your state and local government requirements and laws. And that's what schools are doing. And legislators and state by state are setting things up to help out universities that are competing on such a high level. There are haves and have nots. Certain states do, certain states don't. And not every school buys into the states that are allowing it. You know, like there are states that could lean into what Tennessee's doing right now, but they're for the state, I'm saying certain schools, but we don't see that from top to bottom. But other states don't have that law passed or don't have it written a certain way that reflects and mirrors the same thing that we see down in Texas or what we're about to see in Missouri. And, you know, you're handcuffed there. That's why there needs to be a governing body. It doesn't have to be a federal deal, but it needs to be leadership in the NCAA that's not afraid to get sued. And to me, that would be Sankey and Petetti doing something that forms an umbrella for the Power 2, Power 3, instead of the Power 5, whatever it's going to become. I think that's how we regulate this better than what it is now.
It is just a completely different world we're living in. Jeez. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with the Hutton Woodrow.
Hey, everyone's afraid of a lawsuit because of what the Supreme Court ruled. That's why everyone's hesitant to step forward and lead and try to actually cap this.
And no one wants to be the one that poo-poos NIL deals, because then why would recruits go to that school? Well, right. Maybe they're not embracing my NIL deals. It is just absolute craziness. Hutton, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, thank you guys. Always enjoy this. Have a great rest of the week.
Awesome. Yep. Thanks, Hutton. You too. It is a big day for the Nashville Predators to come in and celebrate it. The Predators president and CEO, Sean Henry, will join us coming up next. Caroline Riley DeMace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Riley DeMace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. 30 minutes until the Predators introduce Andrew Brunette as the next head coach of the Nashville Predators. And to join us in celebrating is the Predators president and CEO, Sean Henry. Sean, how are we doing? Appreciate you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It's always good when you guys broadcast from here, especially this time of year. I wish it was the playoffs, but this is the next best thing. We have to celebrate kind of a new beginning, and that's an exciting day in Smashville.
What does today mean to you, introducing Andrew Brunette as the fourth head coach of the Nashville Predators?
Well, first you go to the storybook storyline that I know Jared Stillman was pooping all over yesterday, which I don't get. He said, I don't even want to hear that he scored the first goal ever. I said, well, you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it a lot. Because it's really cool to have the first alumni from this franchise come back and coach the franchise. And I don't care who you are. If you're a sports fan, that's always a little bit more special. When Derek Jeter becomes the Yankees manager in 5 years or 10 years, we'll be happy about it. I mean, it's just the way it is. And so I think it's really, really cool to have our first coach be our second GM. The guy that scores the very first goal, original Pred, come back and be our coach. And by the way, he also played over 1,000 games. He's also been an assistant GM. He's been an assistant coach. He's been a head coach. We're getting a great hockey guy and a really good guy. So it's really exciting. It really, really is. And it's good to be so positive after missing the playoffs. I missed playoffs a few times in my career. And normally you're sitting around crying and boo-hooing quite a bit. This year was different. From the trade deadline on, there was this air of positivity around the team. And it's because we all see the future. And I think our future got a lot brighter today.
It really does feel like a new era, a new general manager, new coach. You've got a whole group of young guys coming up. What's your message to the fans to say, hey, you are going to want to be part of this transition. You're going to want to witness this.
Well, we saw how exciting hockey can be when you have a good young core coming in, surrounded by very good veterans. You know, one of the best goalies in the league, best defensemen in the league, some of the best puck-moving defensemen in the league, some guys that have thrown up 40 goals, on the team. So you're excited about that. And then you look at the future. We have 23 picks over the next 2 years, 13 this year, 10 next year, and 7 rounds. So, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now, this is going to be a really good team. It's going to be where we want to be, competing at the highest level, not just making the playoffs, which, by the way, I laugh when we all dump on, we're just going to make the playoffs. There have been some teams that have missed playoffs for 10 straight years. Talk to their fan base. You want to make the playoffs, but you don't want to make them without the true ability, without everything aligning perfectly, which only happens once in, you know, every few years for any team. You want to make the playoffs and know you can compete at the highest levels, win the division, finish in the top two or three in your division, and that's where we're going to find ourselves in, you know, next couple of years. Next year, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. You know, with number 74 on goal, who, you know, you always assume you can win every game. But, you know, next year could be similar to this year. You know, we're probably a couple points in, a couple points out. But then the year after, you know, you're taking that big step forward. You look at the Colorado team that we beat back in 2018.
Yep.
They were just learning how to get back in with that young, good core. And you see where they are now. You know, they're a juggernaut. Lightning, same exact way. It's almost like you got to make the playoffs and then you lose and then maybe miss the playoffs for a year, maybe two. But one thing I do know, with Andrew behind the bench, with 74 in goal, with all those young guys, and then our good veterans, it's going to be a fun team to watch next year, and that's the difference. If you're a bad, boring team, it's miserable for everybody. Mm-hmm. If you're a team that's not winning as much as you want to, but it's exciting, and you see the future, you feel pretty good about it.
Now, how has this been different for you, Sean? Because you've been, you know, you've been in this situation before, watching the whole process of hiring a new coach. So is it any different this go around than it has been in previous, other than him being a former player?
Yeah, it's funny. I really correlate this pretty closely to when Barry left us 10 years ago, give or take. We just missed the playoffs for the second year in a row. We knew we weren't going to be as good as we wanted to be. The one year, obviously, Pekka missed the whole season, which without a great goaltender in net, you know, it's hard to move forward. But very similar. You know, that was the 2 years in a row where we had all of our draft picks plus one or two. Where you have to put it all together, and then Lavi came in at the end of the season, just like this is happening. You can plan on what will next year look like, and we squeaked into the playoffs. You know, Lavi's first year, we lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champions, the Blackhawks. But it was a fun, exciting team built off of missing the playoffs for 1 or 2 years. A lot of guys got a chance they wouldn't have gotten before. So I really see it in similar fashion, you know, to that, that you see the future and it's bright, and you get excited about, you know, what this guy could bring. And make no mistake about it, Andrew is an offensive coach that understands it's a 200-foot game, no doubt about it. But every team he's ever been around or with, the power play's strong, and they're always in the top one, two, or three in scoring.
Now, maybe this is an unfair question to you.
Well, then I got one for you afterwards.
Because obviously Trotsky and Boyle sort of made the decision. But I'm looking at it from afar, and I saw what Trotsky said in the Tennessee, and I'm not questioning that. And I'm not, and I told Willie and Caroline, I'm not questioning Trotsky's integrity, not one bit. But it just seemed like the way it all went down, how it all happened, is that customary within the hockey world? I only know the football world, but I'm just saying as far as hockey.
So I don't think it's an unfair question at all. I mean, the one thing that I'm really grateful for, and I talk about it all the time, we have a dedicated ownership group that allows us to do our jobs. You know, they point us in a direction, challenge our philosophies, but, you know, they expect us to do what we say we're going to do. And probably 2 weeks before the end of the season, Barry outlined what the vision and the plan was going to be. And it was going to be, you know, I'm going to take about a month or so after the season ends to really evaluate where we are, what do we need, who could be out there. They have other teams playing in the playoffs, like New Jersey, like maybe the other teams that, you know, candidates were with. You got to wait till they're out of the playoffs to talk to them. But all along, he said, at the very end of May, we're going to make a decision. And he kept, you know, our current staff up to speed. Met with them before the season ended. This is what I'm going to do. This is how it's going to work out. And that's exactly how it played out. So I really admire someone that can set a plan and stick with it. So many of us, you know, set a plan. Exactly. Like Mike Tyson said, once you get hit, the plan goes out the window. But he did. He outlined it for all of us. We believed in it. You know, every week or so we'd meet, get an update. Then last week we met with Bill Haslam and Herb Fritch and kind of walk through where we were, who the final guys were, how we're going to approach it. I was fortunate to be able to be with Andrew Friday for a little bit of time, and I was sold on him before he came in the door because of who he is and his resume. And really the last couple of candidates, including John, you know, I was sold on to be our coach next year if that's where it was going to be. And then once we realized we can get Andrew, it became apparent. But again, Barry set the plan in motion, and then we lived right through it with the staff that just left us. You know, they were kept up to speed the whole time.
Now, was there any, because you said you talk with management, now was there any sort of, hey, where are we? We need to, you know, kind of hurry up and push things forward because we need a coach. We need a decision on whether he's going to be back or try to go out and get another coach.
No, really, I mean, Barry said, this is what I want to do. Uh-huh. You know, this is back end of March, early April, before the season ended. And we challenged that a little bit. You know, do we push out a week or two? Where should it go? But, again, we hired him to be our GM. We hired him to pay the future. And, you know, once he laid out what he's doing, why he's doing it, how he's doing it. And then, by the way, lived into that every day of every week over that 5-6 week period of time, getting us to a place where we're, you know, over the weekend, saying, okay, this is where we're going to go. It was fun barbecuing on Sunday in my Speedo on conference calls the whole day. It was a lot less more fun for my guests.
The visual everyone wanted to.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a Pred Speedo on Sunday. On Monday, it was American flag. But Barry was in his, and David was in his, and Andrew was in his.
Matching, I'm nice.
Yeah,
sure.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course. But it really was. It's one of those things where once you think you have the person you want, then finish the deal. Because he's a pretty sought-after coach. You saw all the rumors, virtually every opening that was out there, he was up for. And I was really, really excited Friday after spending some time with him. More importantly, Saturday night, all day Sunday, and then really Monday morning when I thought, okay, we got this thing done.
We're talking to Sean Henry. And Sean, you mentioned just where everybody is right now. There's so many teams that either weren't happy with how the postseason went or just missed the playoffs. There's a lot of teams, especially in the Western Conference, that you could see it if it goes right. You could have a really good year. If it doesn't, you could go in a different direction. But where do you see, as you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of teams strapped for salary cap space. We saw last year you had an opportunity to get Ryan McDonough, that just because Tampa Bay didn't have enough room cap-wise. With some of those things that could be out there, how do you see it with the salary cap being flat, how the Predators might approach it from that standpoint, knowing that they got a little more flexibility now I guess maneuverability with all those draft picks?
Yeah, the best capital you could have as a franchise, in our league anyway, are a multitude of draft picks and some salary cap luxury or room. We have both. It's kind of rare we have both. We kind of manipulated to get both at the deadline. So it gives us the ability to do a lot. The most important thing that we'll strive to do is strengthen the team over the next 2 years, giving us the real ability in 2 or 3 or 4 years to truly put ourselves in the elite class of this league. So that's the goal. And, you know, I say that, and then July 1st comes, July 8th, and August 15th. Other teams may approach you and, you know, tempt you into doing certain things. If it's the right move for this team long term, you know, we'll do anything. It's nice not to have handcuffs, but have all that freedom of picks this year and next year and the next year thereafter. We have all of our picks still.
How is it going for you? You mentioned the ownership group and how great they have been to work with for you. And now you've got Bill Haslam joining the team. How is that transition in the teamwork going?
Oh, it's great. You know, I am the luckiest guy in sports. For 25 years, I've worked for an owner or ownership group that is very involved with passion, very involved with caring, very involved in doing the right thing in the organization, in the community, doing the very right thing and challenging us to be the best, period. And, you know, it hangs all over our wall. And we had that in Tampa. It led to a championship there a week later with the Pistons, a month later with the WNBA, a month later the AFL, all in the same year. But that's what that type of leadership allows you to do, pursue the best things possible. And that's what started with Tom Seagren, who was chairman when I came here, and then Herb. Soon it will be Bill Haslam. They're so united in doing what's right for this franchise and this city every single day, never one at the risk of the other. For a guy like me and then David Poyle and soon to be Barry Trotz, to operate under that gives you so much flexibility. You're not looking at a 24-hour P&L. You're really looking 10 years down the road always. And that allows you to make mistakes. It allows you to share what your philosophy and vision is and then live into it. And you know, we make a lot of mistakes, but more often than not, when you look at the whole body of work in 2 years or 3 years or 5 year capture points, it's like, oh yeah, that did work. And I consider myself so lucky. Some of my counterparts have daily meetings on what the Christmas card is going to look like with their owner, or the postage stamps, or whose chair is where. And what we have are owners that are passionate and drive us, hold us accountable, but they also just go do it your way and just tell us that we're getting to Miami. Mm-hmm. You pick the route.
Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO. Appreciate you for joining us, Sean. Enjoy the day.
Well, thank you. I'm glad my answers are a little bit shorter than Barry Trotz's. and much shorter than Jonathan's, I think. But I do appreciate you guys being here. Look forward to a lot of good opportunities like this in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks. We'll chat soon. Coming up next, we are 15 minutes away from the Predators introducing Andrew Brunette as the fourth head coach of the Nashville Predators. What do we want to hear from the press conference? We'll get into that coming up next. And your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline Riley DeMays, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline Riley DeMays, 1025-1063 The Game in the Game Nashville app. You can join 1025 and 1063 The Game on June 6th for the night before Charity Riders Round featuring Saving Able, benefiting Souls for Souls. General admission is $20 with every ticket going to purchase a new pair of shoes for a child experiencing homelessness in Middle Tennessee. It's happening at the brand new venue, the Ballad East, next to Gallatin Hotel in East Nashville. Doors open at 6 p.m. You can get your tickets now at thegamenashville.com/golf. Appreciate Sean Henry, the Predators president and CEO, for joining us in the last segment. We will carry the Predators introductory press conference for the new head coach, Andrew Brunette. That's coming up in just 10 minutes. We will carry that live and in its entirety. But I think one thing that I want to hear is, why Andrew Brunette? Mm-hmm. What about him? What about his style? Get out of here, Sean! What about Andrew Brunette? What about his style? What about his coaching? What about his relationship with Andrew Trotz, my goodness, with Barry Trotz? And not just the pre-existing relationship.
Is there an Andrew Trotz somewhere?
There may be an Andrew Trotz.
Somewhere.
Well, wherever you are, Andrew, thanks so much for your contributions to this team. And it's not just the pre-existing relationship of them going all the way back to the beginning of the Nashville Predators, but the relationship now that they are GM and coach, how that works out. Just why Andrew Brunette?
Well, I mean, Trotsky has his reasons. Obviously, Sean pointed out some of those reasons. This was a guy that was highly thought of in the coaching world, a guy that, was an up-and-coming coach, a guy that has worn several hats, albeit they were not that long, but he's worn the hat of a GM. He's worn the hat of an assistant, of a head coach, and as a player. Mm-hmm. So he's a hockey guy. He, like one of our callers said, well, he's a hockey guy, or he wasn't a hockey guy. It's like, okay, well, I guess the definition of a hockey guy is Andrew Brunette.
Yeah, I guess.
Because he's sort of worn all the hats. Mm-hmm. But so I guess from a philosophy standpoint, I guess we will hear more of what he envisions his team to be moving forward. But obviously one thing we do know, other than the hats that he has worn, is that he's an offensive-minded coach. Mm-hmm. And Trotz, he said that's what he was looking for. That's what he's got. So now beyond that, that's something he's going to have to explain to us or to the fans. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily us, but to the fans.
It's interesting how it works in really all sports. Uh-huh. A lot of times is when you're looking for something new, it tends to be the opposite of what a team just had. That's why a lot of coaches resurface in different places. When they let Barry Trotz go, the thought was, okay, they're a little too defensive-minded. They're too structured. They need to be set free a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Peter Laviolette, day one, said, we're gonna go after it. We're going to play forward. We're going to go. And that's what he did. And Sean referenced his first team. They shocked everybody. Nobody thought they were going to the playoffs. They didn't just sneak into the playoffs. They had a higher seed than the Blackhawks. They had home ice advantage against the Blackhawks in 2015. And Shea Weber, this pains me to even say this, he dislocated his kneecap in the first game. They had to play that whole series without him, and then Mike Fisher got hurt. Still went six games. They battled a great Blackhawks team. But that team cleaned up in the regular season. Just a little change, jolt of energy. Philip Forsberg comes in, goes crazy, and he was, 19 or 20 years old? And then you had something that you were building on. Then once that sort of ran its course, they were looking for a little more structure. So they brought in John Hines, and they got a little tougher, bigger, stronger. That worked for a while. Not unfortunately, to playoff success. And now you see it kind of yo-yoing back to they want speed. They want quickness. They want to be more offensive the way the game in general is going. So it's just interesting how that all kind of evolves. It cycles a lot of times.
And that's kind of the Barry Trotz perspective of things, of how he wants this team to play. He mentioned it in his introductory press conference. We've had all sorts of introductory press conferences in this building this year. He said, we want to be faster. We want to be more physical. We want to be a more offensive team. So that can fit along with the hiring of Andrew Brunette. But from the Andrew Brunette perspective of things, I want to know what his experiences that he's had in the past, the perspective that he brings from being the interim coach in Florida, being a President's Trophy winning coach, being the runner-up to the Jack Adams, what is that perspective? And then being an assistant in New Jersey, what has he learned? What is he going to bring to the Predators? What would he do differently? Just his experience in this league. What works? Yeah. What doesn't? Player relations system. How does he evaluate this team, and what is he bringing in to Nashville?
Yeah, he's not nearly as experienced as when Peter Laviolette came in, and right. then when John Hines, quite honestly, he had been a head coach for 4 or 5 years before he got here. So that'll be something I'm sure will be talked about, and he's going to have Barry Trotz to lean on, I'm sure. But he's been a lot of places. Like, he's played for a lot of coaches. Mm-hmm. He's seen a lot of programs. He probably has a lot of enthusiasm to say, okay, now this is mine. You know, right. this is – I can now build it. I'm not jumping over in the middle of the season or next to the guy that's making the last decisions. He gets to make those decisions now, and he's been working towards this for a long time. One other thing, I don't know if we'll find this out. Remember, it's not a headliner, but they did let Dan Lambert go as well, who had been running the power play. It didn't sound like they're going to make any other changes on the staff. That was a question we had yesterday when this news broke. One thing I heard Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick talk about this morning was potentially a name in Derek McKenzie, who has been an assistant coach for the Panthers the last 3 years, another long-time, solid role player in the league for a long time, a little bit younger. That's a name just to keep your eye on, just because Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman are so plugged in. When they throw a name out, I take note of it.
You listen.
So that's just something. I don't know if we'll find anything else officially about that today. But I'm happy for some of the other assistant coaches if they are indeed staying. Happy for them. Tough news for Dan Lambert, but that was one that you could kind of the power play did struggle with new people coming in. You wondered about that part of it.
I think what fans whether you like to move or don't like to move, but I think so more so for the people that said it's about time. We get somebody in here. Look at what he did with Florida. He was on the bench, you know, as an assistant coach with the Devils. You got to let's put the Florida thing aside, because that was a team that was built by what, Quenneville?
He was the head coach.
Yeah, he was the head coach. And then he ends up getting, you know, released from his duties, and we all know why. So that wasn't a team he built. He inherited a team.
That's a good team that's in
the Stanley Cup right now.
Yeah.
So fans, let's sort of taper it. Let's hear what Andrew has to say, and not just say, oh, look at what he did in Florida. No, he inherited a team that was really good. Now, he had to do his job and go out there and coach. I get that. But this situation is much different from the situation he inherited with the Florida Panthers.
And we will hear from Andrew Brunette, David Poile, and Barry Trotz coming up next. We will carry that press conference, Andrew Brunette's introductory press conference, live and in its entirety coming up next. Caroline Ville-DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.